Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the July 13 edition of Commodity Week. This week, the United States Department of Agriculture surprised most everybody in the trade by moving much more quickly than expected to drop corn yield by 20 bushels to the acre. Is it enough? And how much more is there left to the upside when we have a 1.2 billion bushel corn carryout for 2012-13? We'll ask those and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Director of Research for Allendale, Rich Nelson. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and from right here in Champaign County at the Andersons, Ryan Stark. We'll have more in just a moment. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from willag.org, that's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including the daily pre-opening, opening, and closing market report, along with a midday update at W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Well, let's start with this question. When USDA delivered the 1.2 billion bushel carryout for the 2012-2013 marketing year, futures moved higher and then lower after they saw that number. And December corn this week still finished 47 and a quarter cents higher at $7.40 and a quarter cents. Brian Stark, I'm a bit surprised that it has moved as sharply as it has, given that this year's carryout is lower than next year's carryout and was at that same time last year.
I think, Todd, the market obviously is trying to digest the fact of a shrinking supply as well as the anticipation with these high prices of a shrinking demand. As we move forward, the crop conditions continue to decline. The expectation is we'll be down again on Monday without any measurable rain over the Corn Belt. And I anticipate if the ratings do drop dramatically, we could try and test that 750 mark on the Dease.
Wayne Nelson, if I can clarify just a bit, it seems that last year when we were in that position, that we were looking at a carryout that was lower than we do than we have in the coming year. We were at a lower price than we are now.
We sure were, Todd. You know, we started Commodity Week back in 1988, and we remember talking about all these fun things in the droughts way back then. The one thing we do have to look at, and what was observed later in the morning and when we saw the sell-off, was the carryout that we're looking at. And a lot of the fund money, the people that don't actually know what an ear of corn looks like, I thought, wow, that is a big number, and we are too high for that, and that's why we had the sell-off and drop back below $7. But the people that know what corn looks like knows it don't look like it's going to yield much.
Those were the numbers here this last past week. I think the trade's closer to 130 bushel carry or 130 bushel acre yield now. The futures market is talking about the future and trying to anticipate what's going to happen in the future here. So it's going to be a volatile roller coaster, but until we get a handle on the crop size here, it's going to be an emotional trade.
Hey, Wayne, when we got through the numbers on Wednesday of this week and you looked at them, the market was, of course, open. They looked first at the 146 and the 20 bushel drop, and then they looked further down eventually and found the 1.2 billion bushel carryover. Well, I'm just wondering what difference it would have made if the markets had been closed.
It would have. We would have not seen the super surge to the 740 or the 748 at the time, because it was not as bullish as it seemed once you looked into when they cut the demand as much as they did. And like you say, if you look at the carryout number, it was way up there. We were too high if that were the real number. And I admire the government for cutting as hard as they did, as fast as they did this year. But the reality of it is that sometimes, maybe being open through it, the supercomputers picked up that one number and surged on up there a little harder than they should have.
Well, the comment period, of course, is still open for USDA reports on what time they should be released. I'd like to poll each of you and see what time, now that you've had some time to think about it and seen a couple of reports come through while the markets are open, what time would you prefer that they be released, Brian?
I'd prefer 2 o'clock right after the day session closes, and then you've got 3 hours to digest the information before we start trading again at 5. That would be our bias.
I think we got to keep it the same from our perspective, because if you put it till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you'll be there till 6 o'clock talking about it. Then you're putting in orders till midnight. So I just like keep it the same. All the other outside markets are trading when their reports come out. And plus, it gives you as a producer or trader the edge, because if you have a plan, you can use the extreme moves to take advantage of that.
I'll agree with both of them. I would like the market to be closed when the reports come out. I would like to keep them in the morning. I would like to give us an hour so we could all see the numbers. The numbers were flipping. We were trading all over. I hadn't even seen all the numbers, and we'd moved 20 cents in the market. It's awfully hard to analyze numbers you haven't seen.
July corn this week had a high of $7.94. It's low at $7.32 1/4. Settlement price there at $7.55 3/4. It expired Friday. It was just 12 1/4 cents higher. December contract again in the corn pit at $7.40 1/4, up 47 1/4. Elevators will be in a hard-pressed situation this fall because you operate on volume and turnover as opposed to total dollars. How do you prepare for it?
Well, I think you have to lead the pack, and that's what we've tried to do with our corn fall basis. I can't remember last time this time of a crop year we're bidding, option the Dease, basically even with the board for cash corn this fall. And I think, you know, you can sit there, you can lay in the weeds and think about the crop size and trying to grab bushels, but in my experience, you blink during a short crop year and it's gone.
So producers can expect a bidding war for...
I would just suspect at this point, especially in East Central Illinois, where we've been one of the drier areas, that it's going to be very firm and competitive this fall for cash corn.
All right. Turn your attention then, Wayne, to what producers ought to be thinking about as they look out at their field. Some of them will have a decent crop depending on where they are, and it might fade fairly quickly if they're in Iowa and Minnesota and we stay dry. But others now are looking at a failure, potentially. At this point, what do they do on both ends of that scale?
First off, they should talk to their local elevator if they've got grain contracted and ask them, how are we going to handle this? If I haul you all my grain and I still don't have enough, what's going to be the situation? The second bit, if they know they're oversold, they do need to be talking to them and buying out of those cash contracts as soon as they know that they can't fill them. Elevator people are very good if you try to be understanding and tell them you will haul everything you're producing, and if you don't, to work out of things. The other thing that they need to be looking at, and I'm going to say for this year, is possibly puts if they think they still have production, because we need to lock the bottom in, but we don't want to lock the top in, and we don't want to lock in a cash sale.
Yeah, I would just echo that and visit with your insurance, crop insurance agent, to see where you are on that, because that's a big part of the formula.
Speaking of that, deadline to certify crops at the Farm Service Agency, at least in the state of Illinois, is the 16th of July. This one arrived in my fax this afternoon. USDA Farm Service Agency wants to remind producers not to forget to certify their 2012 planted crops and conservation reserve acres, filing accurate acreage reports, of course, for all crops, CRP, and land uses, including failed and prevented planted acreage. There will be some failed crops out there, and they need to get their crop insurance agents on the ground in those fields, too, fairly quickly, don't they, Wayne?
You know, that's the one thing that as soon as they can get their acreage reports in from the FSA office, have their insurance agent enter them and double check their figures to make sure they're right for this year, because there's 99% chance there's going to be claims. Then we're going to want to get a hold of adjusters and look. We know in Kentucky already they're letting them disc up. We know of a couple farmers that had three and five bushel adjusted yields on there, and they are disking them up and actually putting beans on because they've got a chance of rain this weekend.
You mean 3 and 5 bushel to the acre corn?
Yes.
Single digit corn.
That is what they were appraised at. Their corn was that bad. They're disking it up, and some of them are planting beans in that right now with the hope that the rain coming through this week and first of next week might give them a crop of 20 bushel beans.
That'd be an awful Well, I guess they're taking a shot at it.
They're taking a shot.
I'd just like to echo what Wayne said about especially the stories that we're hearing down south in the Delta in southern Illinois. We've heard similar stories as well as zeroing out of acreage production, whether it's production is actually zero. But back to what he alluded to, I think given the discovery period of crop insurance being in October and the question of whether we'll be able to sustain these levels through fall harvest, I think is adamantly important that if you do not know you have the bushels, to look at a paper trade of buying puts to protect your insurance payment, because our insurance in the spring was $5.58 and now we're $1.70 higher. So we have to really look at that, and if you don't have production, to protect that guarantee in the fall.
Yeah, I like that comment too. But one other observation too to add is too, when we looked at the harvested acre numbers with crop insurance and these acres going zeroed out, I think the abandonment or actual harvest acres is going to be much lower than what the trade anticipates, and maybe the yield might not come down as much because we're factored in those poor acres.
Yeah, so that's the other question. So the 146, which is the national average yield, and I've heard this on both sides. Some will say, well, there will be so many acres that go away that the national average yield may be higher than that. Others are saying, no, it will be lower no matter what. Where do you land?
Well, if you keep it in past history perspective, you could probably take the national yield clear down to maybe 120 or 125, but beans that, you know, we could zero out some acres here, we might be in this 135 area.
Well, and back to Kurt's point, I think the question is the acres. And back in 83 and 88, we used a harvested percentage around 85-86%, which could equate to 4 to 6 million acres being taken off the picture. And if that happens, then you may not see a yield drop as much, but that could equate to another 800 million bushels lost to production.
Todd, it's the total crop that matters when we go to dividing it up. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a low yield on a lot of acres or a higher yield and abandon more. It's what the total crop's going to be to try to make it last between exports, feed, seed, and residual.
Earlier this week, Daryl Good and I had a conversation. He suggested the 1.2 was high, 900 million might be high for a carryout, that something more like 750 or 800 would be closer. Anybody agree with that number? Got an idea?
I would agree, given what we expect on the harvested acre side and the yield to come down. I think the market is going to struggle in these levels, although I can get into the point I think we'll also struggle trying to trade above $8. But I think we're going to struggle at these levels to cut more than $1.05 billion in demand that we've already seen cut. Last year, we're already at export numbers similar to this year at $1.6 billion. You've got maybe another 250 to 300 million you can cut off feed, but I think carryout is going to go lower over the course of time.
Brian suggested that you use puts to protect price today. That gives me an idea that he's thinking high price now, maybe high price once we get into harvest, but not as high as we are, and then it fades off at some point. Where do you suggest that point might be in the future?
Do you mean how high we can go before we sell off?
Well, how quick, not how high.
How quick, not high. We've all know that weather markets, generally once we have established the top, sell off very rapidly and sell off quite sharply and at large numbers. I think that this year is not going to be any different than that. What we're trying to figure out now is what price can we go to before we kill enough demand to let things fall out of bed, Todd. We saw Ag Resource, I think today, put a number out there of $8.50. I was saying somewhere between $7.50 and $8 all along. We must remember the ethanol lost that 50-cent blending credit, and that's at least $1.25, $1.75 a bushel for ethanol producers.
And just a high price prediction from each of you, and then we need to get to soybeans.
I would agree with Ag Resource. I think it's going to be a struggle to be above $8, so $8.50 would probably be in maximum top to me.
I agree, $8.50.
All right, July in the wheat, an 842 settlement, up 50 and three quarters. July of next year at 830 and a quarter, up 12 and a half cents. Beans had a high this week of $16.79 and a half, the low at $16.05 and a quarter. Settlement price in the July at $16.42, up 22 and a quarter. November beans at $15.52 and a half, up 46 and three quarters. Do beans have, they're an August crop, so do they have a lot more potential on the upside in your opinion?
I think they do, because I think the USDA isn't fooling anyone with the fictitious demand that we're using in the tables today. They're making things fit, given an 800 to 900 million bushel decrease in South American production. Protein shortage is huge in the world, even more so than feed grain right now.
Yeah, if you look at, if we're going to cut back on ethanol, less DDGs, so we're going to have more of a meal base. But if you put percentage-wise to the 88 rally versus now, you're talking 820 corn, then if you compare that to the beans, you're talking possibly $20 beans, the same percentage up move.
Brazil was $2 over for their bean prices. So the farmers, the bids last night, and they weren't sell, and they weren't buying any. You know, the only market left in town until next March is the U.S. and beans. China is going to be in the market for beans with all the hogs and all the people they need to feed.
What's top on the bean market, in your opinion, at this time?
I think somewhere around $18 at a minimum.
$17 to $18. $20.
All right. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk with Rich Nelson. He's the director of research at Allendale. Our panelists in studio, of course, today include Brian Stark of the Andersons, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities. WillAg.org is the place you can find all of our agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was another hot and dry week in Illinois. The statewide temperature was 81.2 degrees, which is 5.1 degrees above normal. The statewide precipitation was only 0.3 inches, which is about 40% of normal for the week. A few places in southern Illinois did get 1 to 3 inches, which provided a little bit of relief from the drought. The latest U.S. Drought Monitor has increased the drought coverage in Illinois to 100%. In addition, the area of severe drought expanded in eastern Illinois and also east of St. Louis and along the Illinois-Wisconsin border. Far southern Illinois is still considered to be in extreme drought. Warmer than normal temperatures will continue through this weekend and on into next week. Highs will be in the 90s and the lows in the upper 60s and lower 70s during this time. Normal highs for this time of year are in the mid-80s. There is a small chance of rain on Saturday and again on Wednesday. However, these will be widely scattered and not bring much relief. The forecast out to July 26 shows a continuation of the warmer than normal temperatures, which means the 90-degree weather is likely to continue. However, the chances for precipitation are close to normal, which is better than they have been in the last few weeks. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
This is the July 13 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Find us online at willag.org. Our panelists in studio today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities on the phone line. Rich Nelson, who's the research director for Allendale, he's in McHenry, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Rich. Thank you for taking the time. Why don't you go through some of the numbers from USDA and what you thought was right and wrong and what your analytical prospects might be for the crop in the next month or so.
Like your guest mentioned here, I certainly agree with the idea that, first of all, it's nice to see USDA actually give us a very realistic number with these very aggressive cuts to yield, and certainly solving some of the questions we had regarding USDA's viewpoint of the crop as of July 1st here. So as far as bigger picture issues, you know, like most of the guests mentioned here, we're all looking at these yield numbers declining here, getting to 130s, mid-130s or so for much of the trades discussion, as well as dropping harvested. So for the next 2 to 3 weeks, we still look to be really be more of a supply-focused market, and certainly see some prices moving up from here. One thing I would caution, though, like the discussion kind of touched on briefly, we do have some big questions on demand, which the market's probably going to start addressing here in about that 2 to 3 week time frame. Certainly these reductions on new crop demand being an issue, but also when we get to these higher prices, the 750 and above range, that's when we certainly also see much bigger than expected cuts on old crop demand. So certainly let's stay positive for the short term, but in the big picture, I don't see this being a lasting bull market here.
Rich, Brian here. How much of the new crop demand in corn do you think we can cut at the current price levels, given the USDA cut a billion bushels here Wednesday? How much further can we potentially go at these levels?
Of that big USDA cut they did on production, about 57% was offset by a change in new crop demand. Roughly right now, I'm kind of using that for my own self. Actually, we're going to take about, for our own numbers, as far as this next cut in production coming, we're taking just around a billion bushels off this crop as far as our viewpoint. And with that in mind, we also are going to look at roughly about a 60% offset. One thing I'm also going to point out is we are, on top of that, going to start adjusting old crop numbers as well.
We all sort of give our top numbers where we thought it could go to. What's your top number where you think this December corn could go to?
Exactly what you guys are talking. Actually, my number right now is at 790 for December corn, and that's assuming a dramatic cut in production coming next month, but offset certainly by a very strong cut on demand from both new and old crop.
Rich, what would be your number one recommendation here for a producer? What should he be doing here?
Certainly as far as producers in the area right now, as far as the Central Illinois region you guys are talking about, in this case, obviously the question is insurance payment and those issues here. So those people who are talking about severe declines in yields and some sharp issues, I think in about 2 or 3 weeks we will address these issues of, like the panelists mentioned here, buying puts or some type of protection on this insurance money, which I don't think is going to be with us here by that in the same amount by the time October comes.
Where do you see the demand slacking back? For instance, there was a gap lower in the feeder cattle this week. They dropped $7.90.
That's of course, the first one to talk about. There's corn for feed is the easiest one for USDA to make justification there. The poultry companies are already talking about the next leg up and about 25 to 40 cents, talking already about breaking eggs, which is a severe issue for poultry producers to discuss. Certainly our big problem on the cattle line here, with all these feeders going in the feedlots, that you just can't back away from those numbers. So actually for our numbers, we're taking a drop mostly on the poultry end, a small amount on the hog end here. We have a moderate drop coming here for ethanol as well as one for exports.
Rich, what do you think about pricing some 2013 corn or beans on this rally?
I think this is certainly an excellent opportunity here. And we've got to keep in mind, we've had these rallies in 2008 and, of course, 2011. These are based on tight old crop and also a second new crop tightness as well. And neither of these past two rallies really lasted, and, of course, the 88 one either. So the idea that we could get yet another year of production problems lined up for 2013, we can't plan on it right now. So certainly getting that priced in the next couple of weeks would be important.
Rich, I'm going to expand a little bit on the bean side a little bit. Given the U.S. is the only game in town and our protein shortage in the world, given the South America disaster, where do you see your best play in beans today, and how high do you think the bean market can go?
Just making it clear as far as this goes, I'm using right now 1675 for a conservative number. And, of course, depending on if USDA allows us to see that sub 100 million bushel mark for new crop ending stocks. Right now, USDA is at 140. Ourselves, we're at 101. If we do get USDA to actually recognize some of these sub 100 numbers, I certainly would say we get a chance at that $18 region here.
Rich, I've heard comments that some of these elevators might not let producers buy back their cash sale. They want the physical grain. Do you believe that, and have you heard any cases of that actually happening?
I have heard a little bit of talk about it here, but honestly, from our clients, we haven't heard any confirmation of it just yet.
Richard, are you of the opinion that this marketplace will look more like 2002 or like 1988 in the tail?
I certainly agree with the idea of this, the traditional sense in this case, short crop, long tail. And like I mentioned before, right now we're still in this discovery phase as far as supply, and it will be the issue in front of us here. But let's look at the past two rallies each time we went up near that $8 region. In 08, USDA took off 275 million bushels of old crop demand in addition to the new crop demand drops. Just last year, on that rally past 750 up to 799, we actually saw USDA take a dramatic 397 million bushel decline out of old crop here. So in this case, which is different than 88, where we had those huge carry-in stocks, I think this is going to be very similar to the more recent 2 years of a strong rise lasting for another 2 or 3 weeks, and then significant demand declines.
Rich, with the prices up where they are, and yet we continue to hear that China is still very interested in importing and keeping the feed quality up, or the feed for their livestock, for their people, are they going to be cutting back sharply on their imports of grain?
At this point, one thing we always watch with China at this time of year is a lot of their decisions are made on how well their crop is doing right now, how well this crop looks during their summer. And at this point, I wouldn't expect China to make any significant purchases at these levels. Certainly waiting for some prices to fall or something like that might be a better approach for them. And certainly seeing the U.S. crop stabilize at something above 1 billion bushel ending stock might be the approach that they're waiting for here.
There are two possibilities for demand to be cut in the ethanol market. One would be that the mandate would be lessened. That would take an act of U.S. EPA and a couple of months probably. The other is that they could simply begin to use RINs, although I haven't looked at the price of those recently. There should be plenty of RINs available to make up for, I don't know, maybe 4 to 6 billion bushels of corn.
And that's a great point. And the very tough issue here, of course, with the ethanol market is as ethanol is rallied with corn, it's obviously not offset the complete higher cost of corn. But at this point, I'm certainly not in the camp that we're going to see any federal action on the mandate. I think in this case, we might have a tight picture here lined up for the next two months or so on the ethanol side. As far as negative margins, those issues here, I think the industry is going to have to work it out on its own.
And one final thing from you, Rich, I think you have a webinar that's coming up pretty shortly, too.
That serves right here. As far as we do a monthly webinar series, in this case, on this next, I want to say that's going to be on Tuesday the 24th here, roughly around 8 o'clock at night, we will have this webinar lined up. We'll have a special guest. In this case, USDA is going to discuss with us how they do those August field surveys so we get an idea of what they actually may discuss.
Rich, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thanks for inviting me, guys.
Rich Nelson is with Allendale. He's at McHenry, Illinois. Time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Brian Stark.
I just remind everybody, don't, in these high prices, get complacent, and I think take the account the crop insurance policy by defending that into fall with puts.
Wayne Nelson?
It's weather. It's about the weather. It's about the weather. It's going to depend on what we have, and you've got to watch because we don't know what we're going to have for production to sell off the farm, so we're going to have to use options rather than futures like we would like to. Remember, watch the weather.
And Kurt Kimmel.
Yeah, it's a dynamic market. We're going to go from one report to the next. Wayne said weather. I won't be surprised if we trade frost freeze clear into this fall to try to kill it for one last time.
And that's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And, of course, Brian Stark from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Our thanks, too, to Rich Nelson of Allendale out of McHenry, Illinois. He serves as the Director of Research for Allendale. You've been listening to Commodity Week. This is the July 13 edition. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can always find us online at willag.org, or if you have a smartphone, try m.willag.org. We have daily agricultural programming as well. You can look it up in both places, or you can just dial this number, 217-333-3434. We update it with some numbers at about 10:15, a bit of analysis, 3:15 as well. All those times, of course, are central. Have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.